90 minutes of choral music now as we join Alan Jones in the choir.
A little northern nocturne there, Jarmo Parviainen's setting of Ilta, Evening, performed by the Finnish choir he conducted for a number of years, the Hall Choir, based in Helsinki. And amongst the singers on that recording was another composer, a man who in recent years has left his native Canada to immerse himself in Finland's unique choral culture and natural environment. More about him when he joins us live from Helsinki in just a few moments. But first, to a bit of Nordic crossover. If you're lucky enough to live within range of St John Smith Square in London, there's a chance this Thursday to hear some of the finest Renaissance music Spain and Italy had to offer, but all in the hands of a bunch of Norwegians. Not any old Norwegians, though. Nordic voices are rapidly carving a reputation for being able to leap effortlessly across national styles. Let's hear what they make of a Marian motet by the Spanish Renaissance musician Cristobal de Morales, Regina Caeli.
Thank you.
Music from the reign of the all-conquering Charles V, whose kingdom was so big it was said the sun never set on it. That motet by Cristobal de Morales was performed by Nordic Voices, singing in London this Thursday evening at St John's Smith Square. And if you can't bear the thought of a Nordic concert without something a little more ethereal, then fear not. They'll be following their first half of Renaissance Lamentations with contemporary Norwegian music. All that from 7:30 this coming Thursday, as I said, St John's Smith Square in London. Time for a change of gear now. 8 years ago, a young Canadian composer found himself with a grant to study in Finland. It turned out to be love at first sight, literally, with a girl he met on the first day of his composition classes, now his wife. But the love ran deeper too, as he gradually immersed himself in the ever-changing environment of this fascinating country.
Thank you.
An evocation of springtime cherry blossoms, part of Matthew Whittle's cycle of the Four Seasons Shiki, performed there by Helsinki's Hall Choir, conducted by Esko Kallio. And I'm pleased to say, delighted, that Matthew Whittle joins us now from the studios of Finnish Radio. Welcome to the choir, Matthew.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
To me, that sounds utterly convincing as Finnish music through and through. Do you think of yourself as a Finnish or a Canadian composer?
It's kind of difficult to say at this point. I'm still an immigrant in Finland. I'm considered to be a Finnish composer at this point, I suppose. But I guess I would say that I feel myself to be more Nordic than either Canadian or Finnish at this point.
I know you also had a leaning to this more reflective, slow-moving style. How did that go down with your teachers when you were still studying back at home?
That's very difficult to say. Yes, my music is predominantly quite slow and meditative. And in the schools that I studied at in the U.S., this type of quiet, reflective stuff was not viewed particularly favorably. I was always sort of pushed to have more fast music, more energy, more rhythmic punch. And it wasn't until I moved to Finland that I felt confident enough in it and also free enough to relax into this state that I write in now, for the most part.
Tell me about those first few months then, working as a composer in Finland. Was it easy to be accepted?
Well, I think it's always difficult to be an immigrant anywhere, really. It did take quite a while for me to integrate and to find outlets for performances. But once I did, I think the size of the community in Finland is quite small. It's a small country population-wise. And so my name got around quite quickly, and opportunities started to form independent of things that I tried to create for myself. So in a way, yes, it was difficult, but no, it wasn't.
We're going to hear more from your cycle of Four Seasons in a moment. Your depiction of summer. Tell me more about what you were trying to do with this piece.
Well, this piece as a concept is a kind of four-movement symphony for choir. The text originated from a Japanese poet, a quite little-known Japanese poet named Santoka Taneda, who was a traveling Zen monk, a beggar monk. And he wrote very, very unconventional, non-traditional haiku. And there's this incredible quality of being completely at one with nature, not in a very romantic sense, but in a very sort of exposed, almost dangerous sense of being both enveloped and threatened by the natural world at the same time. And I found that quality very, very appealing. And that sense of stasis at the heart of each scene, I think, is something that exerted a very profound influence on the way I wrote this piece.
I've got to ask you about the extraordinary prelude also. Tell us about that.
The preludes arose as a need to reconfigure the choir between the movements, because the choir is distributed differently between each piece, and so the choir is divided into various groups and subgroups and soloists that need to move around the stage. And so I devised the way of doing that is through these preludes, which are manipulated field recordings of birdsong. And the birdsongs are a very particular species that are common to the area of southern Finland where I live in Helsinki at the start of each season. So I was trying to achieve a very kind of raw, almost documentary effect in these scene-setting preludes. They're not really pieces. They are just a kind of fragment of the scene that I'm trying to capture in sound later on in the choral music.
Summer from Matthew Whittle's depiction of the Four Seasons. Escocolio conducted the whole choir there, featuring, I think, Matthew Whittle with those amazing overtone effects at the end. Is that right?
That's not just me. There are a couple of other guys involved in that as well. But yes, I was one of them.
I'm fascinated to know how your sense of identity has changed over the last few years. I don't know, have there been moments when you've suddenly felt desperately homesick for Canada and wondered, I don't know, what on earth am I doing here in Helsinki?
Yes, I think it's kind of inevitable. Living abroad as a foreigner, it's sometimes in a very bone-deep way I do miss where I'm from. But I've also felt very comfortable existing in the border regions between various cultures my entire life. I grew up in an English-speaking family, but I went to school entirely in French, and so I spent most of my youth with one foot in both sides of Canada's major cultures. And that no man's land between countries, between languages, between cultures has grown comfortable. And so in that way, I feel very much at home in Finland as well, despite the fact that it's quite different from where I'm from.
Going back to the Finnish choral life, do you find that choirs in Finland are really willing to tackle new works?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's one of the crowning glories of Finnish musical culture is how willing to attack new music amateur groups are, because it's something that's very deeply embedded in the musical culture here, is this working with living composers working as community members, living with performers and coaching them on their music. So yes, absolutely, there's a very widespread willingness to deal with new music here.
I know, as you said earlier to me, you found inspiration from outside Finnish music too, and especially the Estonian composer Kirillus Krek. Tell us a bit about why you like his music.
I think it's the simplicity and the directness of expression in his music. He is a composer I encountered in my first year in Finland. The first choral concert I did here with the Sibelius Academy Chamber Choir, there was a set of his psalm settings on the program, and I was really captivated by really just the unaffected simplicity of the way he set the text and how freely melodic it was and how naturally his tunes conform to the words. And I think that's what attracted me to his music.
Words from the Psalms of David there, set to music by Estonian composer Kirillus Krek and performed by the Estonian Philharmonic Chamber Choir, conducted by Paul Hillier. Matthew, a real sense of directness there, very little complexity on the surface. I sense that's something that you really strive for in your music too.
Absolutely, yes. I think the compositional process for me is best described as an elimination of everything that's unnecessary in the expressive mode of the piece, in the pitch content of the piece. I'm striving for the maximum simplicity that I can get away with.
Am I right in thinking that you've been working on some psalm settings of your own as well?
I am, yes. It's a project that came about through a commission by the Finnish Church Music Composers Union, and I'm producing a set of two psalms in Swedish, which is a first for me. It's
right.
A very, very strange experience working with a language I don't speak at all. Of course, I don't speak Japanese either, but the texts were quite a bit shorter, being haiku poetry. But I'm doing two psalm settings in Swedish, one for the Feast of Thanksgiving next October, and one for the Feast of Annunciation.
And we're going to finish with one of your longer pieces, and this is a work which I know you've described as a real turning point in your style. Why do you say that?
Well, it came at the end of a fairly long fallow period of not really writing anything particularly interesting or long. And I wrote it in my second year in Finland. And I feel like it's the first piece where I experienced a certain freedom from outside influences, outside opinions, a freedom to just write the thing I wanted to hear more than anything else and not satisfy any kind of aesthetic or stylistic dogma. And also to acknowledge the latent minimalist tendency, I think, that existed in my music previously to that I hadn't really set free until that point. And I think the result is still one of my very favorite pieces that I've written. I know you shouldn't say that about your own music, but I do rather really enjoy this piece. And I feel like it's a very intimate, personal statement. And through this text that I set, this very long, complex poem by Octavio Paz, As One Listens to the Rain, I was able to kind of get to a new level of comprehension of how I work as a composer and how I express myself through music. And for that reason, I feel like this piece is the kind of source of everything that came after it, whether choral music or instrumental or what have you.
Well, let's have a listen to the piece that you love so much, As One Listens to the Rain, performed once again by the Hall Choir and Esko Kallio. Thank you so much, Matthew, for joining me.
Thank you very, very much. It's been a great pleasure.
just beautiful. Matthew Whittle's setting of words by Octavio Paz as one listens to the rain, Esko Kallio conducting the Hall Choir from Finland on that recording. Now, just before my last work of the evening, a quick mention of a project going on right at this moment. The Church's Conservation Trust is celebrating its 40th anniversary with a weekend of choral concerts in 40 of this country's most beautiful religious buildings. No surprise that Talis's Speminalium is getting a good outing, but there was also a chance for the choirs to vote for one work they'd all like to sing as part of the celebration. Guess what they picked? A perfect piece to celebrate our country's treasury of fine churches, Hubert Parry's Jerusalem, performed there by the Wainfleet Singers and Choir of Winchester Cathedral, with the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra conducted by David Hill. Wonderful to think of those sounds resonating across 40 churches this weekend as part of that birthday celebration by the Church's Conservation Trust. You're listening to The Choir with me, Alad Jones, with you until 8 o'clock, and I've just one more work lined up for you. The second of the four complete masses we'll be hearing in the coming weeks by one of our Radio 3 Composers of the Year, Joseph Haydn. All of them date from Haydn's time working for the Esterházy court, a regime famously diffident towards music for the liturgy, especially during Haydn's first period there. His Grosse Orgelmesse, large organ mass, dates from exactly that time, and as the name suggests, features an unusually prominent role for the organ, which was very likely played by Haydn himself. But what of the churches where the piece was intended to be performed? Walter Reicher, artistic director of Austria's own principal Haydn celebrations, gave us a guided tour in the town which became Haydn's second home.
We're now in the middle of Eisenstadt. Eisenstadt was always a small town and still is, 13,000 inhabitants. It's still nothing. And when Haydn came here, there were still the city walls around it, and there were three streets. The main street, the Cloister Street, and to Parish Street. And we're now in Parish Street because here's the cathedral, a very old building from the medieval times. And we have different churches here in Eisenstadt, which were all somehow connected to Joseph Haydn, especially this here, because this was the biggest when Haydn came here, and he had to do masses here as well. He didn't only do masses for the Esterhazes, he did also masses for the town. But this was always the big church here, the cathedral. And now we go into this church because it's most likely the first performance of the Große Orgel Solomesse, the big organ solo mass, was done here. Yeah, let's have a look. So this church, because it's so old, there were many different renovations going on all this time. There were Baroque elements and elements from the 20th century, and a couple of years, not so long ago, they made a new restoration now, and it looks very light. And this is one of the seven organs we still have in Eisenstadt which are connected to Joseph Haydn. And on this organ, this is the organ gallery. Maybe we go a little bit closer. Again, the organ gallery is it's bigger than the one in the chapel in the palace. Haydn could have here more singers, more musicians. He had also in his contract that he played the organ in the Franciscan church, for instance. He got extra paid for this. Here in this place, they still have the archive where they have the scores from Haydn's time, where in his handwriting he had still these corrections and marks into it. So this is a long tradition, this church with Haydn's music. We have two organ masses by Haydn. One is the little organ mass and the other is the big organ mass. The organ was not so important for Haydn's masses. All times the organ is in it, but mostly as the basso continuo instrument and as a solo instrument. It's in this spectacle, in this mass, it's also a solo instrument. And like I said, there are still seven organs surviving here in Eisenstadt, and I think this is one of the nicest we have here.
Walter Reicher there, and so to the Mass itself, which Haydn dedicated to the figure he turned to time after time, both in his personal devotions and in his liturgical music, the Blessed Virgin Mary. The vocal soloists on this recording are Dorothea Röschmann, Bernarda Fink, Helmut Wildhaber and Klaus Mertens, with the Hugo Distler Choir and Vienna Academy, conducted by Martin Hasselberg. The organ soloist is Elisabeth Ullmann. Thank you.
Oh,
A rousing bid for eternal peace at the end of Joseph Haydn's Mass in honour of the Blessed Virgin Mary, his Grosse Orgelmesse. Elisabeth Ullmann was the organ soloist, with vocalists Dorothea Rösmann, Bernarda Fink, Helmut Wildhaber and Klaus Mertens, with a Hugo Distler Choir and Vienna Academy, conducted by Martin Hasselberg. And that's all I've got time for this week. Next Sunday, all the colours of Spain, but through British eyes. I'll be meeting the UK's only professional chamber choir dedicated to the performance of Hispanic and Latin American music. Will they bring it off? Find out at 6:30 next Sunday evening.
That was Alla Jones. The choir was produced this week in Cardiff by Michael Sercombe.